Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
For parents in Alaska, finding affordable childcare is tough. Between rising costs and long wait lists, families don't have a lot of options. Meanwhile, the state is seeing centers close as providers struggle to make ends meet. We'll discuss the struggles facing families and the people who watch their children today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello from Alaska Public Media. This is Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early. Why is childcare in Alaska so difficult to find? What are the business considerations for people who want to open a childcare facility? And with such immense demand for families who need reliable quality care, why aren't more childcare programs opening and finding success? Here to help us understand what it takes to stand up a childcare facility and hire qualified staff is Stephanie Berglund. Stephanie is the CEO of THRED, the state's primary childcare resource and referral nonprofit. Hi, Stephanie.
Good morning.
And from Juneau, we've got Leah Van Kirk on the line. She's a policy advisor for the State Department of Health, which handles a lot of state child care functions. Leah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, Stephanie, you work for THRED. First of all, like, where did the name THRED come from?
Yeah, we love the name. THRED is, as you said, a private nonprofit. We're the state child care resource and referral organization. And for over 40 years, we worked to strengthen and connect early childhood education across the state. So it's not an acronym. It's a play off of connecting families to child care resources. It's a way of us symbolizing how we're connecting early educators and child care programs to professional development resources and how we're connecting communities and businesses to child care solutions.
So, Stephanie, I guess, can you set the scene for us regarding childcare? Like, how does the sector look today compared to, let's say, before the pandemic?
Yeah, there's been a big shift. I think it's no secret that childcare has been a challenge for decades, but we've seen a big change, a big decline in access and the struggles of affordability and quality over the last 6 years. So, unfortunately, over the last 6 years, we've seen about 25% of the childcare programs close, and we have not seen a net gain of that capacity kind of bounce back since. We've also seen a higher turnover of our early educators, and the prices continue to climb for families. So childcare is also very expensive.
Leah, can you give us some insight into your work as a policy advisor and how that affects childcare policy in Alaska?
Sure. Thanks, Wesley. As a policy advisor, we review the situational impact of childcare in Alaska. And so I supported Commissioner Hedberg in chairing the Governor's Task Force on Childcare. And through that task force, we developed recommendations. And so one of my roles has been to help support the implementation of the recommendations from the task force and to work with the Division of Public Assistance Childcare Program Office on implementing some of the funding that has been appropriated by the legislature and the governor in order to support the childcare system. You know, I think a key part of this is building collaborative partnerships and hearing from our stakeholders, from our childcare providers, from our parents, from our families, from our childcare resource and referral agency THRED, to make sure that we're making informed policy decisions that really support the childcare system as a whole.
Yeah. So, Stephanie, you mentioned about a quarter of childcare providers have closed in the last five, six years. One of the more high profile ones was the closure of the Boys and Girls Club of South Central Alaska. There were two centers in Anchorage that closed in late December. Just sort of from a top down view, like what kind of happened there?
Yeah, we're so sad to see the longstanding Boys and Girls Club program close. That program had a licensed child care program of serving about 150 children in the Anchorage area, plus all of their great clubhouses and camps across the state. So we're really sad to see that close. I think it's an example of, you know, the child care business in general is a really hard economic model. Some people call it an economic kind of market failure, frankly. And so looking at, you know, kind of the core problem, I think, of our childcare structure is that parents can't afford to pay the true cost of quality care. And some people are surprised to hear that because they're already paying a lot. They're paying a high market price for childcare. We know that families are spending an average of 15% of their income on childcare, which is a lot. But then we also know that childcare business owners struggle to sustain their businesses because they have that gap. They have the gap of what the true cost of quality care is compared to what they're bringing in that tuition alone. So that impacts their bottom line and their ability to be successful. So we want to make sure that educators can be paid a livable wage and that businesses can not only survive, but be sustainable and thrive. And that's just going to take a different financing model. So it's a real struggle for many programs.
Yeah, and I'm happy you brought up cost of care. Leah, can you talk a little bit about, you know, your research with cost of care, how it compares here to maybe other states? Is the Alaska cost of care, which it sounds like the cost of care is already much higher just from a logistical standpoint, but is it something a little more acute felt here in Alaska?
Thanks, Leslie. Yes, absolutely. We did a cost of care study about a year and a half ago, and so we really looked at the details of what costs are specifically very high in Alaska, and compared to other states, you know, the cost of providing care is higher, especially in our rural areas or in areas where we know it's expensive to rent or own. So, you know, one, we know that the cost of staffing is a high contributor to the cost of providing care. Wages are higher in Alaska than other states because the cost of living is higher here. But also rental space or owning space in Alaska contributes to significant cost as well.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. Our topic today is Alaska's childcare struggles. When the costs that go into a childcare facility often don't match what is being received by the childcare facility. You know, you think about it, it's like somebody watching your child for 8 hours a day. You know, how much are we getting paid for 8 hours a day of work? Mm-hmm. You know, Stephanie, what's the role of Thread when something like a closure happens? You know, you mentioned about 150 families, mm-hmm. or was it 150 families mm-hmm. or 150 children?
Children. Mm-hmm.
150 children were without a program when the Boys and Girls Club of mm-hmm. South Central Alaska closed. What's the role of Thread there?
Yeah. Well, Thread is able to offer a few services that can help families and early educators. So one of our primary services is free resources to families. So we offer free child care referrals. It's a non-eligibility based service for any family who's looking for, searching and shopping for care. We want to help them take the guesswork out of how to find a program that fits their child, fits their family, and they feel comfortable. We also help families afford child care. So helping them understand what child care benefits, subsidies, what assistance that they have available to them that they can qualify for to help offset some of the costs. And then for early educators, we can help them on our website, we have job postings for the early childhood and childcare market. So programs can post their openings with us and we can help with that recruitment and help to place those teachers. We don't want to lose those important teachers in our sector. Like I mentioned, it's a field with low wages and high turnover. So the more we can retain our quality educators, the better we'll all be.
And I guess I should disclose, my wife does work for a Head Start program.
Yes.
She's a family advocate here in Anchorage. And the reason I mention that is because Thread doesn't just support people who have lost their jobs, but there is also ongoing sort of financial support for people in the industry, right?
There is. We offer several programs where we support professional development for early educators. Right now, all of Thread's professional development and training opportunities are free. We're the largest educator of early childhood teachers in Alaska. We also have some scholarship opportunities, and when there are resources, we have a program that we run called the Roots Awards, which stands for Retaining Our Outstanding Teacher Stipends. So these are actual wage stipends that help offer some increased support for recruitment and retention, really trying to retain those important and quality teachers in the field. We also do a wide menu of services to programs. So we're helping them with technical assistance, consultation, and really some targeted quality initiatives to help them improve the quality of their care. So we're helping them in the classroom with teacher modeling, maybe room arrangement, helping them select curriculum, and with some of our quality initiatives that include training and that technical assistance, we also have some financial support available to help programs.
And so, Leah, I'm curious, I know that THREAD is a partner with the state, but I'm wondering what other role the state has in either supporting child care centers so they don't close, helping child care workers who maybe lose their jobs, and then helping families who find themselves without child care, which is something that I imagine if a child care center closes on Friday, it's a big consideration if you got to go to work on Monday.
Sure, thanks. So THREAD is a grantee that's supported by the state's Child Care Development Fund. And so that federal funding supports the state through our Child Care Resource and Referral Agency, THREAD, to implement many of the things that Stephanie is talking about. So we really rely on THREAD to be that intermediary that provides all of these important services. I will say, though, that we work together closely around things like our child care subsidies. The state and THREAD and other partners actually work together for implementing that processing eligibility and supporting providers. You know, the other way that the department is trying to support families and providers is by looking at what is going to help stabilize the child care sector. And so the state provides something called the Child Care Grant, and that is a combination of federal and state funding. And this year we are focusing on the Child Care Grant redesign. And we've assessed what strategies to move forward that is going to support child care providers, because we know that child care providers are struggling based on their business modeling, and the cost of providing care, and so, and I would say particularly for infants and toddlers. So one of the things that we have done is, one, we increased like the base formula for those child care grants, and so every provider that's enrolled in to receive the child care grant will receive an increase because we changed that base formula. We increased it. The second thing that we did was, starting with January 2026, we are providing a supplemental payment for providers who are caring for infants or toddlers on top of the formula payment that they're receiving on a monthly basis based on the number of children they're caring for. So I think the way that the state is supporting child care providers is, you know, through having a robust child care resource and referral agency like THREAD, providing a multitude of services through our child care grant that is administered through the state, and then also through many of our partnerships. For instance, we work closely with the Alaska Chamber, and last year Senate Bill 96 was passed, which implemented tax credits for employers, which really incentivizes employers to invest in childcare for their employees. So many different ways, and I think that's what makes this difficult, is that there's not one thing that's going to solve the challenges that we're facing, but many things all together and collectively that we can work on that's going to make a difference.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early, and we're discussing child care and the struggles that many families and child care providers face in the state. Leah, as you were going through those recommendations, those changes, it sounds like a lot of those came from the task force that was established by Governor Dunleavy a few years ago to sort of address some of the state's child care struggles. I think there were like 56 recommendations. Are those changes that you mentioned, were those sort of directly from that that process, that task force process?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you noticed that. So yes, 56 recommendations, and actually in looking at the governor's task force, you know, list, 40 of our 56 recommendations are either underway or already complete. And, you know, that certainly doesn't mean that we don't have, you know, a lot of continued work in front of us. But what it does mean is that there has been actionable progress based on those recommendations. And that's important because without that actionable progress, we're not going to see change. So, I think, you know, another piece of this work that I want to call out that has been, I think, important and meaningful is building the relationships with businesses and employers. And, you know, one of the recommendations in the task force talks about the importance of supporting employers in building on-site or near-site childcare so that employers have that to offer to employees. And we, SB 95 passed, that was part of that legislation, and we just got approval for that position that's going to be working specifically on that. And so, you know, in the coming weeks, we'll see a job posting. And so I just want to call that out for people who have been invested in the childcare field and businesses and helping those come together, because that's a big piece of this, right? Supporting the workforce in Alaska is important. And then building on partnerships with businesses to help support their business modeling.
Yeah. And Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, it sounds like a lot of the changes that you've mentioned, it sounds like there are a lot on the consumer level, right? It's whether it's businesses being incentivized to have childcare or provide childcare for their employees, or changing the sort of the amount for reimbursement through childcare tax credits. What sort of changes have been made at the state level on the provider side?
Sure. For the provider side, one of the things that we heard from providers is that some of the regulatory pieces were barriers for keeping their business open. And so actually, since the Governor's Task Force on Childcare, we have completed two regulatory packages and made some regulatory changes. So one of the regulatory packages focused on reducing barriers for administrator qualifications. So prior to that regulations change, there was a requirement that an associate administrator had to be present for every 30 children in care. And childcare providers communicated that that was very hard to be able to maintain and impacted whether or not they could keep their businesses open. So that requirement was removed in regulation. The other thing that we heard from childcare providers was that the requirement to have an administrator or an associate administrator on site during all hours of operation also was really causing a lot of burnout. And so we removed the requirement for administrators to be on site during all hours of operation and implemented a regulatory requirement that the administrator could delegate appropriate staff just to help remove those issues of burnout that the administrators and the associate administrators were facing. We also broadened the administrator qualifications that are needed to meet those administrator requirements, allowing for additional degrees that are related to the field to qualify for them.
Yeah.
I think those are some, three key regulatory changes that we made that really were in response to our childcare providers and stakeholders through public comment communicating to us what some of the issues were.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the state, but there have been sort of local more local ways to sort of address childcare. We got an anonymous call who was curious about the marijuana taxes in Anchorage and mm-hmm. how that has helped with childcare. You know, that was a change that was, I think it was voted on 2 years ago and it just started rolling out last year. Stephanie, can we talk a little mm-hmm. bit about, you know, where that funding from marijuana taxes is going to support childcare?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, in addition to the great work that's happening at the state level that Leah highlighted, we're really happy to see more local governments focus on childcare and look at how they can also help with creative solutions. We've seen and many programs model after the great work of Juno, actually. The city and Juno were really a leader in this space and have inspired many other local communities, including the Anchorage community, of how to respond. So a few years back, the Anchorage voters voted on a proposition, at the time it was Proposition 14, to dedicate the existing Anchorage marijuana tax revenue to childcare and early education. So that set up an Anchorage Child Care and Early Education Fund and stood up a board to kind of set the priorities and make recommendations to the administration and assembly for how to spend those dollars. So far, the revenue has been between $5 and $6 million. Last year was the first, 2005 was the first year of the program implementation, and there were some great initiatives. THRED was actually awarded one of those to provide operating grants to child care programs. There was another initiative to support and pay for child care subsidies for the child care teachers themselves. So one of those recruitment and retention strategies is really to help offset the costs that teachers have for their own child care. And then they also stood up an innovation and capital fund to kind of ask the community, like, what were some emergent needs that they have. So the first year was a success, and they're launching into year two, and we're excited to see those investments and others grow.
Yeah, you're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early, and we're discussing childcare today on the show. I wanted to ask about sort of other communities, but, you know, one of the things you noted is that the childcare subsidies are going directly to childcare workers so mm-hmm. they can support their families. And not to play devil's advocate, but I am curious, you know, I think when some people voted, they might have thought that average non-childcare workers would receive sort of some sort of childcare help. I guess from your vantage point, why is helping the childcare providers be able to afford childcare, why is that a good use of that money?
I have a couple of thoughts. I think the first one is really trying to stabilize the sector. So we're still in a state of childcare being very challenged. And until we can move the sector to something that's a little bit more sustainable and thriving, our focus is, and I think the ACE Fund's focus is really still on how are we helping to stabilize things in our communities, and recognizing that we have a shortage of teachers, so that recruitment and retention has been a primary focus. I think what you're hinting at is, you know, all early educators need support, and I think this gets at kind of this notion of there's many issues in the childcare sector, and there's no silver bullet that will kind of address all of them. It's a complex issue, and looking at where we support families, or do we support early educators, or do we support the communities, all of these areas and need to be addressed. And so I think they're doing a great job of picking some priorities and starting, but you're right, you're hinting at that the issue is much larger and needs much greater investment.
Yeah, and I guess compared to how much the industry is struggling, you know, how much do those taxes go specifically for Anchorage?
Are you referencing for the marijuana?
I guess in the overarching sort of struggles that they're facing, how much does that marijuana tax sort of address that issue?
Specifically for the early educators?
Just in general, yeah. Like the sector in general.
Yes, right now they are allocating a priority of childcare. So I think all of it, except for, you know, they have, of course have money to support the board. They have a director on staff, and so some of the administration funds as well.
You know, and one of the things that was also, I believe, funded by the marijuana taxes is I know ASD has a pilot project mm-hmm. to sort of have childcare facilities that would out of sort of vacant buildings. Mm-hmm. I am curious how external sort of financial binds, you know, the school district just announced that they face a $90 million deficit. How does that sort of impact these sort of, they're parallel goals, right? But they, it's like, you know, you can put money towards a pilot project, but if the school district is struggling, like, how does that impact that?
Yeah, I think you're hinting at that, you know, there's lots of different ways that we have the structure of quality early childhood education programs in the city and across the state. So childcare is by far the largest, you know, set of private and businesses, whether those be childcare centers, family childcare homes. But we also have a large and growing preschool system. We have Head Start, as you mentioned, military and tribal childcare programs as well. So that whole sector makes up our community-based early childhood education programs. And I think parents and working families use all of those systems, you know, interchangeably. So I think one of the things we're, we work on with our partners on the back end is to make that a seamless system and to make that diverse delivery system, you know, something that works for all families. So if they choose to enroll in a pre-K program, then they may need full day care and wrap that around with child care services. So the more partnerships we can create, the better. And you're right, the Anchorage School District, and I know other school districts also are seeing budget shortages and struggling. And we know that they can, you know, better and more increasingly partner with more preschool and childcare programs.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the efforts that Juno made to address childcare. We were talking about the Anchorage ones. Can you talk about other communities across the state that have sort of taken a more local approach to addressing childcare?
Yes, there's been some exciting movement in Seward. And then we're also seeing some really a lot of local groups set up kind of task force and work groups. There's active groups in Homer and Valdez. There's active groups that meet in Kotzebue, all trying to really strategize about how to kind of come up with more innovative kind of community-based models that work for their community.
Yeah. And what do you see as, we were talking a little bit about the task force on childcare, you know, what do you see as the most, from your point of view, the most effective recommendations, and what do you think sort of going the farthest?
Yeah, that's great. I was thinking about that question. I think there's two buckets that I guess stand out for me. And one is really wrapping our arms around the need for more access to care. And I think one thing that we're really focused on at Thread is we don't want to just create more spaces. We want to make sure that those are high quality, that they're well resourced, they can be sustainable and thriving high quality programs. So I think when we think of access, we're ensuring that they have also a high quality workforce. So I think focusing on the workforce is another, I think, a high value recommendation from Thread's perspective. So how can we continue to support the pipeline of professional development needed to, you know, keep our early educators trained and advancing their professional development for quality, but also how do we continue to support them with wages, looking at wages and benefits, our recommendations in the task force that we think would really make a huge difference to stabilize the sector, to help increase that access, and ultimately help the sector really thrive and lean into the high quality care that we need.
All right. Well, we're listening to Talk of Alaska right now. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back to talk more about childcare. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early, and we are discussing childcare and the struggles that families and providers face here in the state. And before we get back to the Governor's Task Force, somebody did email us. Burl Sheldon says, might boroughs and school districts reinvest in the housing benefit to address needs for all educators, teachers, and the childcare sector? I guess where do boroughs and school districts sort of fit in? We talked a little about that before with preschools. I guess, Leah, can you start from the top about sort of where boroughs and local school districts sort of fit into the housing benefits?
No, I think if I were to talk about the intersection of boroughs and school districts, you know, what I would say is that there are opportunities for childcare businesses to partner with school districts to offer childcare at reduced rates, oftentimes because they're not paying for rent when they invest in those kind of those mutual agreements. And so it provides additional opportunities for expanding childcare businesses. So it was one of the recommendations in the task force was to support school districts and to assess what spaces might be available in the publicly owned buildings or areas, as well as, for instance, housing. Are there housing areas that have space that might be a place where a childcare business could be added? And I think that, childcare, housing, some of those basic necessities are really going to support people in choosing to go back to work or to be working if that's what they'd like to do. And I'm not sure if I understood the question exactly, but I certainly know those have been items of discussion in the governor's task force and important to us expanding the supply of childcare because space is so limited and can be very limiting due to cost as well.
Yeah, it sounds like the question was more about sort of ways to sort of offset those high costs by maybe investing in things like housing benefits. Leah, you had mentioned earlier that of the 56 recommendations that the Child Care Task Force sort of presented the state, you said 40 of them are either have been completed or in process. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So what about the other 16? What are some recommendations that either haven't been addressed or don't have maybe? I imagine finances are a big part of that. But, what are sort of the 16 recommendations that still need to be addressed?
It might be hard to call them out individually unless I read them, from the list. But I would say that one of the recommendations was to, for instance, develop additional resources for childcare providers to understand the variance process. So like if they were not approved, if their background check wasn't approved, to make sure there's additional information for them related to how to request a variance. Another one was evaluating our barrier crimes matrix and identifying differences between state and federal background check requirements to see and evaluate, if there were more restrictive background check requirements in place in Alaska and to determine if we felt like changes needed to be made there. That is something that there has been progress in looking at that, but we haven't completed that item. Let me look at a few of the other ones that I would say that we need to work on.
Yeah, I guess
another one was.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the other recommendations was to consider capital funding options for remodeling spaces to meet childcare health and safety requirements. Yes, funding is a challenge, especially capital funding in our state. And we know that capital funding is a need oftentimes in some of our most rural areas where there's not a lot of building space available or spaces to start a childcare business.
Yeah.
Definitely. Go ahead, sorry.
It sounds like, a lot of the issues that, we talked a little bit about school districts and how, there can be sort of a competing, there can be competing problems, right? There can be efforts to establish new programs. But when, in the case of the pilot program for childcare and ASD, the Anchorage School District faces a deficit. The state certainly has a problem with funding and finding sort of ways to sort of have long-term fiscal plans. And so some of the suggestions being made, aren't as feasible just because the money's not there immediately. But I did want to take a step back. We've been talking a lot about childcare providers and the struggles facing them, but this is a very acute issue for parents. When we started reporting on this heavily, my direct supervisor was about to have a child, and so mm-hmm. it felt like we were learning along the way. Like, oh man, this is really tough. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you don't really know about until you are a parent. I'm curious, Stephanie. What advice do you have for new parents or prospective parents? How early do they need to start their search for childcare? And do you think that there's a lot for them to find?
Yeah, thank you. our number one recommendation for families is to start early. So there's stories we hear often about, you know, the first people that I told that about our pregnancy were actually the childcare program that we wanted to get on the wait list, you know, before we told our other families and friends. So parents are excited and, you know, inundated with lots of planning and thinking when they're expecting. It's such an exciting and wonderful time. And, you know, often the last thing you want to think about is who am I going to, you know, who's going to be caring for my baby other than me and other than yourself. And so we provide those supports for families. We, like I mentioned earlier, help them take the guesswork of how do I, you know, shop for childcare? How do I make that selection? What things am I looking for? What questions do I ask? And for them to be able to take the time, that important critical time, to interview different programs, to really shop around, to find that right relationship with a teacher, administration, an administrator, a program that really is going to work for their family. I think we, in addition, you know, thinking of cost and you know, how parents want a budget for childcare, and, you know, we have a cost calculator on our website that can help them with that decision making. But there are, while we talk about there's a huge gap and a need for more childcare, there are childcare spaces available. So we also don't want people to be afraid about calling and reaching out, because we can help them find programs that are available now or when they need it.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early, and we're discussing childcare in the state, both from a family and a provider perspective. You know, one of the things I've been really curious about is we were discussing cost of care earlier and how, you know, in a lot of ways, the childcare sector as it is kind of a money losing model, you know, mm-hmm. because so much finances and so much cost goes into caring for children that often a parent would, short of hiring a full-time live-in nanny, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's probably the most comparable cost. But a lot of the struggles that the childcare sector have been feeling really felt acute around the childcare, around the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, was it not a problem before then? Or why did it seem like the sector was maybe fine before 2020, and now it's like in distress, Stephanie?
Yeah, thanks for highlighting that. I think it's, we have to acknowledge that it was struggling and was a challenge sector before. And I think with the pandemic and things getting worse, it really highlighted how broken of a system it truly is. So that's unfortunate. I think why it felt so exacerbated are a couple things. One is that many childcare programs shuttered during that time and had to scale way back. We often forget about the intense efforts that they made to continue that continuity of important care and sanitizing toys and taking temperature checks and trying to keep young children apart, which is almost impossible. So going to great lengths, you know, to provide the quality care that we want to see. And in addition to that, those that sustained all of that incredible work, we saw a huge turnover in the early childhood field. So that also greatly disrupted the quality and that important continuity that we need for quality care. So what's happened since also is there's way more competition for those more entry-level jobs, sadly, and similar paying jobs in retail and in our restaurants and on our barista carts, which are great positions, but they are in direct competition. So we saw private businesses able to increase their salaries at a time where childcare could not afford to do that. So that also changed a lot of the workforce.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to talk a little about sort of in the news a lot lately, there's been a lot of talk about childcare with respect to federal subsidies. Mm-hmm. There was a big sort of purported fraud revealed in Minnesota. I'm curious, Stephanie or Leah, as a result of sort of the federal government's increased look at how federal subsidies go out, have any of the programs that Alaska relies on from the federal government with respect to childcare, have they been affected? I guess, Leah, we can start with you.
Sure. Thanks, Leslie. So at this time, Alaska has not been impacted in terms of, you know, seeing any holds on funding or anything related to program integrity or fraud. On a national level, the Administration for Children and Families is requesting, you know, additional justifications in in the information that we provide to them when we are receiving our federal funding. That is something that the state has been well positioned to do and has done, and we have not had any concerns about that. And so, you know, I think what I can say about our child care program office is that we have a high focus on program integrity and preventing fraud. In our audits, our federal audits, we've had less than a 2% error rate, which is excellent if you compare across the nation. So I feel like Alaska is very well positioned programmatically to be able to align with any additional or new requirements, and has been up to the state.
Yeah, and then Stephanie, you and I have talked in the past about some proposed changes to how the federal subsidies roll out. I think there's an effort to change it from enrollment to actual attendance. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little about how that process is going and how that could potentially impact childcare providers?
Yes, there's a current review at the federal level from the Child Care and Development Fund, which is the federal bill and money that we're talking about that flows through the states to support child care nationwide. And they also set the rules, I guess, of, you know, how states comply and issue their programming. And that includes our subsidy payments. And the proposed rule, it's just closed for public comment, and something that the federal administration is considering is offering states more flexibility for that. And the rule was in place in 2024, really offered more benefits for families and benefits for early educators. And now that's up to states to kind of to decide how they want to do that. So right now, Alaska is, and Leah, you can correct me if this is wrong, that we are paying our subsidies based on kind of a hybrid mix of that. So mostly based on enrollment, and there is a minimum required attendance, but it's not solely based on attendance. So that's a positive thing for Alaska. I think one of the changes that we were hopeful to see that is proposed in rolling back is prospective payments. That means paying the programs up front for the expenses. And we were really hopeful to see that because that would help programs with consistent operating dollars and maybe reconciling on the back end rather than, you know, waiting several weeks for that reimbursement payment. And it would also follow how we're paying other subsidies like housing and food support.
And Leah, just to make sure, was Stephanie correct?
Yes. Yep, that is correct. So right now we pay based on attendance, but there is, you know, if a child attended, you know, X amount of days and it's not every single day, then there's a full payment made. So we, you know, definitely are acknowledging that the cost to providers is based on holding a spot for a child who, you know, plans to be there for a month. And so we care for that in how we pay our child care subsidies. I think, you know, additionally, one thing we haven't talked about yet that I think will impact families is the implementation of SB 95. And that's related to child care subsidies as well. And this is, I think, important for parents, where we likely will go into public comment on the regulatory changes in the coming month or so. And there is an increase in the eligibility guidelines for parents to qualify for child care subsidies. So we'll be able to serve more families. More families will be eligible for a child care subsidy than where we're currently at right now. And that, I think, will allow more families to afford child care, even with a bit of a higher income. The other piece is that we, in SB 95, is that we're decreasing the percentage of the family copay. So right now, the highest percentage that a family's copay would be is 9%, and we're capping that at 7%. And so parents will see a decrease in the amount of copay that they'll be required to pay. I also just wanted to add on something important when we're talking about child care worker subsidies. And I know, Stephanie, you talked about Anchorage implementing that. And one of the things that we learned from the cost of care study and, you know, from looking at the number of licensed childcare spots we have across Alaska is that most childcare centers are not operating at their licensed capacity. And what that means is that their business model is not operating at its most effective amount of children enrolled. So when you have, you know, the number of children enrolled based on your licensed capacity, you're going to see better business modeling and better outcomes and affordability for childcare businesses, for parents when those rates are set. So when we can incentivize people to come back to work, and maybe they choose to work in a childcare center or childcare home, we're also not only providing that benefit for a childcare worker, but we're building the supply of childcare that's available for our workforce across the state.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back on Talk of Alaska to talk more about childcare. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Wesley Early, and we're discussing childcare in the state, both from a family and a provider perspective. You know, Stephanie, I wanted to talk about, you know, this sort of sea change that the childcare industry has seen, where it used to be something very sort of personal or family related, but now it's something that local governments and businesses are starting to take notice of. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, we're excited that there's more focus on childcare, and I think a growing recognition that this is an important fabric of the infrastructure of our local communities. This isn't something we can outsource. This isn't something that AI can help fix for all of us. This is a high-touch, labor-intensive industry, and it's a public good, and we should be treating it like a public good. So looking at how we can consider, you asked about boroughs and cities earlier, like for how we can think differently that childcare is a part of that continuum of our community education system, but also how it's integral for our community health, our the health and strength of our local economies, and really just the quality of life in our communities across the state.
Yeah, and I really am curious about, there's been a lot of talk about businesses that can provide childcare either directly, like in-house, or sort of provided as a benefit. There have been a lot of discussions with the task force about making that a little easier and providing tax credits. Can you walk through, are there any businesses in Alaska that provide that kind of childcare that you think is like a model for other people that might be interested?
Yeah, there are some great employer sponsor models. Unfortunately, there's not enough of them. I think there's maybe less than a dozen, probably about 10 across the state. Many of them are in our hospital systems. I think a great example locally here in Anchorage is at Credit Union One. That's an example of outside of a larger system, you know, looking at how they can focus on supporting their employees. They have great statistics about their recruitment and retention. I think they even had they have one of their current employees who grew up and attended one of their child care programs too, which is such a great story. So there are some great models across the state. We would love to see more. And like Leah mentioned, we're really excited about that position being created at the state and our growing partnership with the business community to help see more of that. There are new federal and state business tax incentives, and we encourage businesses to look at those to see if they can qualify and look at how they can be offering more support for childcare, if not on-site and near-site childcare, how they can be extending benefits to their employees and utilize those incentives.
Yeah, and Leah, I'm curious, you know, from a state perspective, you know, would you say that this is also something that the state is seeing a lot more either investment in or discussions or, frankly, feedback from the community in the state?
Yes, absolutely. We have a good partnership with the Alaska Chamber. We, you know, have had different businesses and associations reach out to be a part of how we move forward in terms of offering childcare and partnering with childcare sector and businesses. And, you know, I mentioned Senate Bill 96 and the childcare tax credits a little bit earlier, but this really, I think, opens the door for employers to contribute to employees' child care costs and to be able to claim those tax credits, as well as being able to claim education tax credits for the cost of operating a child care facility for their employees. I know absolutely as we start thinking about rural health transformation in our state that there is a focus on workforce. And when we want to support the workforce or our healthcare workforce, that means being able to provide child care. I'm really looking forward to how we look at transforming not only the child care sector, but also our rural healthcare workforce in order to support healthy outcomes for children and families across our state.
All right. Well, we've got a few minutes left, but I just wanted to sort of ask both of you, what you would want to see in the next 5 years for childcare capacity across the state and what it would take to support this. So maybe in 60 seconds, Leah, what is your pitch for how you would like to see the state look in 5 years?
Sure. Thank you. I would like to reduce the amount of childcare deserts that we have across Alaska by finding how to support small communities, large communities with the right type of childcare in their communities and increasing their supply so that any parent in Alaska has the option of childcare for their children if they want to go back to work. I want to see a workforce that is respected, that is compensated well, that has the benefits that they need to stay in their career path if that's what they desire. We know people in the early childhood education and care workforce love what they do, and we want to support them and continue supporting them so that they can maintain their career caring for Alaska's young children who we want to support. I would also say that I want to see good and strong partnerships with businesses so that we are walking next to each other as we support this change in Alaska.
Yeah. And Stephanie, 5 years from now, what are you hoping the childcare sector looks like?
I would just say ditto to what Leah said. But I think to build off of that, when I think about access and building that back to the supply that we know families want and need, I also think about, as she said, really strengthened collaboration in local communities, more local investment, where businesses on the ground can be helping with those solutions and coming to the table for really innovative ways and ideas and different models. You talked about partnerships with school districts, but I think we can think even beyond that of just thinking more creatively about innovative childcare models. So there's great examples of that happening across the country. There's multi-generational, care settings and some fun things that we can look at to be in respond to that access need. And then specifically, I would also include the workforce. So in addition to what Leah said, I think very specifically looking at a sustainable source for wage support, those Roots Awards for early educators, and a comprehensive benefit system they can rely on.
All right. Well, we've been discussing the need for reliable childcare in Alaska here on Talk of Alaska. We're just running out of time. I want to thank our guest, Stephanie Berglund, who is the CEO of Thread, which is the main statewide nonprofit that helps to support the childcare sector and to refer people to those programs. And we also had from Juneau, Leah Van Kirk, the policy advisor for the State Health Department. Our engineering team today was Crystal Hyde. We had Annie Fies, our producer, editor, Lori Townsend also in the booth, and Ava White on phone. I'm Wesley Early. Thank you so much for tuning in to Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.